Declan Lynch is back with us. You earlier were talking about 1990 being the best thing that ever happened to the country. But I saw you once compare it to what happened to 2002 has been the worst thing that happened since the Civil War.
Yeah, it was an unbelievably traumatic thing. And to a certain extent that if most of us actually can't remember much of the football at all. Like, I mean, only the other day I was told that we missed a penalty against Spain. And I really had to actually search in my mind how you could forget that is extraordinary. But over the years, I've kind of thought deeply about this. And I figured that, you know, we misunderstand it in this sense, in that we present it as a situation in which half the country were in favour of one person, you know, Roy Keane, and the other half.
I just realised we hadn't even mentioned his name or Mick McCarthy's name yet, but everybody knows what we're talking about.
Right, well, half were in favour of Roy, the other half were in favour of Mick McCarthy. And I think that that's not true, actually. I think the real reason it was such a trauma was that within each of us, we kind of swung both ways. Do you know what I mean? That when we woke up in the morning, we were for Roy, and by lunchtime, we had switched to Mick. And like all kind of great dramas, it's that kind of internal conflict that causes the explosion in the end, you know? And it's too simple. I don't think Irish people are like that. I don't think we have these firm convictions about things, or, oh, I'm very much in favour of Roy. I think he's absolutely right. And no, I'm a Mick man. I don't think we're like that. I think we're too conflicted and too kind of, you know, vague and confused about things. So I think it was this war within ourselves, within each individual, between the heart and the head, you know?
I'm going to do a show of hands from the audience here in the Sugar Club. Now, thinking back, not where you think now, but back in 2002, how many here were on Roy's side? How many were on Mick's side? That's pretty much a 50-50, isn't it? How many of you have changed your mind in the 10 years since? Oh, a handful, a good few people. Okay. Kevin Kilbane, thank you for joining us. Kevin Kilbane is with us today. Thank you. Zinedine Kilbane, as I should have said, and thank you to the Irish Daily Mail for helping bring Kevin across today. Did it overshadow things for the players a bit? Well, we were all caught up in it back here, but what was it like for me, one of the players in the squad?
I was just mentioning there about the penalties. I forget the penalties as well, to be honest with you.
Well, we try to forget about the rebound off the penalty.
Yeah, I forget them, it was surreal. We were away from it all. We were in, obviously, this tiny island in Saipan. We were away from it all, and because of the time difference, we were getting everything filtered through later to us and things like that, or whenever it was. So, I mean, it was bizarre. Yeah, it was when it all got off. And we were just talking there. When we hit Japan, Mick had obviously said at the time, look, we will not mention Roy Keane. As soon as we get to Japan, that's it, done and dusted. And little did we know how big the story was actually becoming, the roller coaster every single day. And then once we did kick off against Cameroon, we tried to focus as much as we could on the game, but obviously that was the huge overshadowing thing from the whole tournament.
Okay, these are all the if-only questions, but what if he had come back? I mean, do you think would the players have accepted him back, and how would the team have performed if you had him back?
And I think if it was agreed he did come back, we would have had to. We would have had to go with it. I mean, I think it would have been very, very difficult if that happened, but it's all in hindsight, whatever it is, it was never going to happen, was it? I think once Roy had landed back in England, back in Manchester, it was never going to happen then.
And I presume, as a footballer, you must have seen loads of dressing room rows and all the rest of it over the years. Well, yeah. On the scale of 1 to 10, what was the row between Roy and Mick like that day?
Probably about 11, yeah.
And did any of you think of intervening to try and stop it at the time?
No, I'll tell you, I always room with Quinny, so me and Niall were rooming together, and when you're with Quinny, you always go, except you're going to be a bit late down for dinner. So me and Quinny were a little bit late down for dinner.
Which is why he's late arriving here this evening.
I know. Exactly, yeah. So me and Quinny were a little bit late down as usual. And there was three big tables that we would go on predominantly for dinner. And Niall and myself were a little bit late. And we had to sit on our own on this other table away from everybody else. And then we were there a couple of minutes. And then Roy comes down after us two, which is unusual for Roy. Always exemplary with his punctuality. Anyway, we get down. And Roy comes and sits on my left-hand side here. And then as we're talking through dinner, Roy said, it's going to go off tonight. And we didn't really know the full extent of what was happening, really. So as Mick comes into the room from our right here, we've all turned to Mick like this. So literally, Roy is there on my left shoulder here. Roy is there. And I'm mixed up here, stood in front of us, and I'm just thinking, oh my God, the table's here beside me. I couldn't move back. There was nowhere for me to move. And I'm thinking, this is going to go off here now, right between me, and I'm going to be the one that's going to have to stop it. There's no chance. So anyway, fortunately, it didn't go off anyway, and it all erupted and it all went off, yeah. So that was it, yeah.
Paul Howard is with us as well. And Paul Howard, as well as being, he was the Sunday Tribune's chief sports writer at the time, but he is now also the author of a new book, Triggs, the autobiography of Roy Keane's dog, which has just been published in the last week. So tell us, what did Triggs make of it all when Roy arrived home prematurely from the World Cup?
Well, I think unlike just about everybody else, Triggs kind of saw it coming. There was this famous meeting that Roy has talked about happening in his house 2 years before the World Cup, when Mick went to the house and they discussed how they might do things better and how the preparations might improve, how they might, you know, get chicken and pasta before they went out to play, how the training, they might get a proper training surface. And Triggs, I was interested in writing about that from a dog's point of view, you know, for sort of...
Which makes about as much sense when it comes to what happened that year as anything else.
Well, yeah, I mean, I suppose Triggs saw it as an issue of submission and dominance, which I think we all do now, looking back, there was a history of antagonism there. And looking back now, I suppose sensibly, when you think that... The FAI put these two men on an island in the middle of the Pacific.
Well, indeed, you weren't in Saipan because the budgets were a bit tight in the time in the Sunday Tribune, and I didn't send you there. I sent you on up to Japan instead about a week later.
Very sensibly.
Yeah, but you went to Saipan subsequently to sort of go back over it, sort of do the post-mortem on it. And what did you make of the island when you got there as a suitable place for an Irish soccer team to prepare for a World Cup?
Well, it was a party island, first and foremost. That's the thing that struck me. And there were three American Navy ships stationed off the island, and they seemed to rotate, that one was close to the shore and they were too far away, and then they would sort of move. And the one closest to the shore, the sailors would come on shore leave. And that's what the island... I mean, that seemed to be the first and foremost, the industry, you know. There was a lot of drinking, and there was a sex trade there as well that was just unavoidable.
Kilbane, can you confirm any of this?
Yeah, we managed to sneak one or two, I think, yeah. No, I can't confirm, no.
I do remember interviewing the groundsman of the famous pitch where, you know, it was like a... I mean, it really was like a lunar surface. I mean, Kevin, you played on it, but I mean, there was divots taken out of it and everything. And he said to me that when he heard Ireland were coming, his first reaction was... I can't believe somebody thinks they're going to play football on this pitch. And he said to me afterwards that, you know, the amazing thing was there's a local man here. He's Japanese, and he does skydiving. So he gets wealthy tourists and goes up in a plane with them, and they get strapped to his chest and he jumps out of an airplane. And the landing spot, they put an X in the middle. The landing spot was in the middle of the pitch where the Ireland team were training for the World Cup. And as he said to me, you know, if it had been sort of 4 hours later, I can't imagine what Roy Keane's reaction would have been had he seen this Japanese man falling from the sky.
I want to go into the audience, because I asked the question earlier about who in the audience was on Roy Keane's side, who was on Mick McCarthy's side. We have a Cork man called Derek Lynch in the audience. Good evening to you, Derek.
Good evening, Matt.
Now, what side were you on?
I was on firmly on Mick McCarthy's side.
As a Cork man?
As a Cork man, yeah.
And I believe you ended up on Primetime as a result. I've been the only Cork man who was willing to come out and say that.
Yeah, I was driving to Dublin with work, and the story appeared, or I think it came on the Pat Kenny show, and I was listening to Joe Duffy on Liveline, and... Mick McCarthy was getting slaughtered by everybody. There wasn't one person on Roy Keane's side or
Mick McCarthy's
side. So I rang in, and the researcher said, "Oh, you're for Mick McCarthy? And I said, yeah. And she said, oh, you're the first person. And I said, yeah, and I'm from Cork. And she goes, oh, my God. Will you come on the radio? So I debated it with another guy and Ray Houghton and Jimmy McGee. The interview finished, and around an hour later, I got a phone call from this gentleman from RT and said, oh, what do you think about the Saipan issue? So I discussed it with him, and that was it. Around another hour later, I got a call from a lady and said, discussed it again. She said, would you like to come out to the RT studios and discuss it? I said, fine. So I rang a friend of mine and said, come on, we're going on to questions and answers or something, and we'll probably get a beer or two out here. So I arrived. I arrived out into the RT studios, and there was a lady at reception with a very official, with a clipboard, and I said, Derek Lynch, and she goes, oh yes, Derek, we'll take you up to the green room. So went up to the green room, and she said, to my friend, said, Michael, you can stay here. Derek will take you to makeup. And I went, right, and I was looking at her. I said, where exactly are we going? She said, oh, well, we're going on prime time. So we went down into the makeup room, and Eamon Dunphy was sitting down, John Delaney and another guy, and I was just sitting there and doing makeup. So we went on, we went back to the green room, and they'd given us a little form to fill out. With your name, address, and who are you? And then there was, down at the end of it, was fee.
So you got your drinking money as well.
And I was looking at it, and the lady was there, and she was looking at me, filling this out, you know? And I was just about to put a one, and she said, no, 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 that's a zero, she said. And but later, after I went on and batted for Mick McCarthy. And,
yeah, were you able to go back home to Cork afterwards? Were you accepted back in Cork?
Not really, actually. I went into a bar for a drink after in Donnybrook in Dublin, and this guy came up to me and said, I just saw you on television. He said, I'm buying you a pint. And and his friend next to him said, you buy him the pint and I'll throw it over him. when I got back to Cork, there's a couple of lads in my children's class who had seen it, and the abuse I got from practically everybody in Cork. Yeah. Got
Derek Lynch, thank you very much for joining us. Tony, of course, you missed it because you retired at that stage, although, as you always say, you were suspended after being sent off after the match in Turkey in 1999, and you're still serving that suspension. But watching it from the outside, how mad did you find it?
Well, the sad thing, and Kevin would have probably echoed this, is that Roy could be really funny, couldn't he, Kev? Yeah. He had a wit about him as well, that when he was really on his, sort of felt good, he could be funny, and he'd join in with the lads. And I didn't see, because I saw Roy as a young lad. He came into the squad as a, 19, 20-year-old. He came all throughout, sort of, you know, World Cup 94. So Roy had obviously changed quite a lot as an individual, and had become much more of a dominant figure within the 2002 group. So when it all happened, it was just crazy. The thing I could never get, whatever side of the fence you were on, whether it was Keane or Mick McCarthy, I could never get why you'd sacrifice a World Cup if you had grievances. You know, I could never get why you would want to leave and not play for your country. That's the one thing that...
Noticed only half the audience is tapping you as you say that?
Well, you know, Roy was an incredible footballer, and he was one of the best I've ever played with. And I felt saddened that he didn't participate in a... To be fair, the players done brilliant in 2002. They looked like they had a point to prove.
And Kevin, is that frustrating that, again, as I was ready with said by Declan again, we sort of perhaps forget parts of the games and what was achieved there because of all the concentration on what happened before the tournament?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the big talk about it so often since that Spain game, but we actually did dominate Spain. Apart from the first 10 or 15 minutes of that game, we dominated Spain, who had world-class footballers. But the big talking point was that everybody would always bring up to you, if Roy Keane was playing that day, would we have beaten him? And that's not necessarily the case.
But would you have beaten them if Mick McCarthy had told you were playing against 10 men in the extra time?
Yeah, I know. We actually didn't realise that until about 20 minutes into extra time. So it was 10 minutes left. And we actually, I think there's 10 men here. Gee, we didn't know. But But I think throughout it all as well, Roy was such a wonderful, wonderful player. I mean, I've heard him, I've seen, I think the book as well, he's saying about he had to work very, very hard at his game, but nobody can ever take away what he did in qualification in getting us to that World Cup, because he was unbelievable against Portugal, unbelievable against Holland in the two Lansdowne Road games. He was magnificent in qualification for us. And I think he would be probably the most influential player that I've ever played with on the pitch, because the amount of players that we come up against in that campaign, the Davids, the Seedorfers, all these sort of quality, real quality players, they were frightened to death of him. They would not go near him. They were frightened of his aura that he had. They were frightened of going to tackle him on the pitch. And he also had the ability to back it up too.
Indeed he did. We're going to have to take a quick break. Back after this. Welcome back to the Sugar Club. Niall Quinn has joined us. And as Niall walked into me, Tony Cascarino just leant over to me and says, does that mean I'm finished with now? How many times did you substitute for each other, Niall? How many times did you replace him and did he replace you?
I can't remember, but somebody did say it was a world record.
And how many times did the two of you actually get to play with each other?
Once or twice, and we actually... We roomed together. I remember one time we played and we won and we thought this was great. We should do it more often. Jack's going to pick the two of us. And the next game, he didn't pick either of us. But we'd a really good understanding. And one of the hardest things, and Tony got this as well, Jack could say to you, I want you to do this, I want you to do that. And then you're coming off after an hour. You know, and it really, it flattened you in the dressing room before a game. You knew whatever you did after an hour, he was going to bring Tony on, or if I was a sub, he knew I was coming on. And it was a bit off-putting, wasn't it?
Yeah, when we played Egypt and we drew 0-0 and we had a really bad performance, and Jack come up to me, pulled me in the hotel, and said to me, I'm dropping you. And I've gone, why? He went, you were freaking shit. So I've looked at him and he went, Quinny's been superb. And I was like, well, Jack, I was doing, well, you know, trying to explain, and I just knew it was falling on deaf ears. But if he was justified, Quinny gets the you know, equalising goal against the Dutch, and that's part, we was a team here.
Was that the sensitive man management we were talking about earlier?
He's had his moments, but I think he knew what the team needed at certain times.
Sorry, I just thought, actually, we have another guest joining us on the phone. Roy Keane, good evening to you.
Hello.
Thank you very much for joining us.
I can't believe what I'm hearing. I'm falling off my couch here. It's like listening to a bunch of fairy tales. It's like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It's like Jack and the Beanstalk. Scare at bedtime with Kevin Caban, with Roy made out as the big ogre. What kind of a program is this, Matt? It's an absolute disgrace. It's a shambles. All credit to revisionism at the end of the day. I don't think David Irvine could have done a better job of changing history than you've done. You think I was Paul Potter or something, or Mahmoud Ahmadinejad at the end of the day?
Look, we're not trying to judge anybody here now.
Not trying to judge. You set up your own little kangaroo court there in the Sugar Club, fed the crowd up with booze. It's like the Late Late Show last Friday night. All I expect to see is Twink running in telling Cascarino to zip up his Mickey. I knew things were bad in this country, but I didn't think they'd gone as bad as Zimbabwe. I've seen Robert Mugabe give fairer trials than this. And I'm ashamed of you as well, Matt. I'm ashamed of you as well. I thought you were one of us. I thought you were a North Mon boy. But no, you've washed your hands of the whole thing. Pontius Cooper with that other langer, Derek Lynch, Judas Iscariot, a Cork man turning his back on his own.
Roy, come on, Saipan's just one slot in this programme. We're talking about lots of other memories here too.
Oh, a slot, is that all I am now, a slot? Is that what I'm reduced to, a slot? There were people talking about civil war in this country, families divided, Marion Finucane, Donegal Doolin, everybody talking about it, now it's a slot. What are you doing in the last half an hour if it's a slot, Matt? Watergate and the bubonic plague with Mark Lawson.
Roy, there are plenty of people here who have the highest of regard for you and who are saying lots of good things about you.
Highest of regard? Are you serious? Are you saying that with a straight face? You got a lad on the couch who's written an autobiography of me dog. His pal's written a book about me dog. How would he know about me dog? How would he know what me dog thinks? Is he a canine psychologist? My dog was a highly complex animal. He enjoyed Borneo. He didn't write books. And you got Mother Teresa on the couch as well. That's hilarious. Mother Teresa's on the couch. Has he brought his ball with him? Has he brought his ball with him for the arms? Huh? All you need is John Delaney and Mick, and you got the whole deck of langers at the end of the day. Matt, do you know what you can do? You can stick your euros up your slot at the end of the day. Good night.
And don't be a langer about it. Mario Rosenstock, thank you very much for joining us. Kip Grove and the Indempsey Breakfast Show every morning. Thank you. We will be back after this short break.